Comparing the Philadelphia campus with some of Cézanne's other views of Mont-Saint-Victoire and with photos of the area can help us grasp some of the perceptual subtleties and challenges of the work. Take the left side of the mountain. Though the outermost contour is immediately apparent, inside of it one can discern a second line, or more accurately, a series of lines and edges. The two converge just shy of the mountaintop. The area between this outer contour and the interior line or ridge demarcates a distinctive spatial plane. This slope recedes away from us and connects to the larger mountain range lying behind the sheer face. Attend to this area and the mountain seems to gain volume. It becomes less of an irregular triangle and more of a complicated pyramid. Or look again at the mountain's most obvious focus of interest, the top of the mountain. Cézanne's other works show the mountain has a kind of double peak, which a slightly higher point on the left side and lower on the right. At first glance, the Philadelphia canvas seems to contradict this. The mountain's truncated apex appears to rise slightly from left to right, but a closer look reveals that Cézanne does not respect topography. The small triangular patch of light gray, actually the primary of the canvas, can be read as belonging to the space immediately above the mountain, or perhaps as a cloud behind it. Thus, it is the gray and light blue brushstrokes immediately below this patch that describe the downward slant of the mountaintop. Curiously, in one respect, our point of view is actually a little misleading. At an elevation of 3,104 feet, or 946 meters, the left peak is not the highest point, but merely appears so from Les Loves. A huge iron cross, Le Croix de Province, was erected in this spot in the early 1870s, the fourth to be placed there. Though visible from afar, the cross appears in none of Cézanne's depictions of the mountain. Cézanne had presumably stood on the summit, or these summits, several times. He had thoroughly explored the countryside around Aix, first during youthful rambles with his friends and later as an en plein air artist in search of motifs, and we know for certain that he climbed to the top of the mountain as recently as 1895. Armed with these experiences, he could have estimated the distance from Le Love to the top of Mont Saint-Victoire with some accuracy as about 10 miles, or 16 kilometers as the crow flies. When he stood on the mountain in 1895, Cézanne had, so to speak, entered into one of his own landscapes. As he stood there, perhaps he paused to recall some of the paintings of Mont Saint-Victoire he had already made. But, to return to Gauguin's language, could he possibly have dreamt of the works he would go on to paint in the following decade, works like the Philadelphia landscape with its high horizon, intense blues, and astounding vibrancy? Writing near the end of his life, Paul Cézanne told an art critic that one does not put oneself in place of the past, one only adds a new link. In other words, through his art he wanted to engage with art history but also to modify it and take it in a new direction. It is a sentiment beautifully exemplified in the artist's five paintings of card players, which he had worked on about a decade earlier in the early mid-1890s. In terms of its subject matter, the series owes a clear debt to earlier depictions of card game players by Baroque and Rococo artists such as Caravaggio, Delatour, and Lenain brothers, and Chardin. Within Cézanne's own lifetime, the theme had been taken up anew by Daumier, Meissonier, Degas, and Callebaut. Cézanne's new links lies in the way he steers the subject away from his obvious symbolic and dramatic potentials, clubs and hearts, winners and looters, cheaters, and the cheated. All of this has been thoroughly explored already. Instead, Cézanne attends to other aspects of the activity. He stresses the shared social space of card games, intimate and familiar, and the attention and concentration the game demands. Not coincidentally, these are the same psychological states demanded by the arts of making and looking at art. The version of the card players at the Metropolitan Museum of Art by Cézanne is now generally thought to be the earliest of the fine paintings in the series. It depicts somewhat eccentrically proportioned figures surrounding a table, three playing cards and a fourth merely observing the game, his pipe indicative of his contemplative attitude. These are rural laborers, quietly and sociably passing the time in a tavern or room. Like the other works in the series, the setting in the Metz campus is sparse. We see a table and three chairs, two of them more implied than fully described, a full pipe rack, a swag of yellow fabric hanging from the room's rear wall. The tabletop creates a clear focus of attention within the large work. It supports the player's arms and hands, which in turn provide a frame for some objects, a pipe, cards, and a prominent gray rectangle, perhaps a tobacco pouch or another card. Although this would have been a familiar scene to Cézanne, we should not imagine him setting up his easel in front of an actual card game. Instead, the artist's surviving preparatory works indicate that he studied his figures independently, one by one, and then incorporated these studies into a multi-figure composition. Cézanne made oil studies for two of the figures in the Metz painting, and both models have been identified as farmhands who worked on Cézanne's family estate near Aix-en-Provence. Even while they share the same space, Cézanne's figures retain a sense of independence and self-containment. They are engaged, as one art historian aptly put it, in a game of collective solitaire. And yet, one detail in the Metz painting points although subtly, to a sequence of events and thus the logic of an actual game. The figure on the left of the work, modeled by one Pauline Poulet, appears to be on the verge of extending his index finger as though about to pick up a card from the table. It's a gesture that connects thought to action, the contemplation of a hand of cards to the movement of a hand. Similar actions, although more emphatically rendered, can be found in an earlier depiction of card players by Gustave Callebaut, who was both Cézanne's colleague in the Impressionist group and a collector of his work. The particular logic of any card game determines the value of any given card within it, and so Callebaut provides us with an important clue in his title, The Bezique Game, and even allows his viewer to discern the colors and ranks of a few cards in his painting, a red ace, a black seven. In contrast, Cézanne's instinct is to withhold all such information, to keep his cards close to his chest. On his table, there is an upturned card holding three roughly rectangular patches of red pigment, but these patches do not closely resemble diamonds, as though to lessen any resemblance, the card also contains similar patches of white and bluish paint.